This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
That's it back from Depay. Depay again. Quick feet and pushed away by Loic Vyler. Adroitly springing to his left.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with this week's guest who recently called time on an expansive career that saw him fly via Concordia from Switzerland to England with a spell travelling the world with the Canadian national team. A multilingual clean sheet record holder with Shrewsbury, he's played alongside some of the world's top stoppers and played under some of football's most engrossing managers. Now focusing on the next phase of his career, Jason Lutwyer, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Thank you very much.
So I've gone Lutwyler there. Is that correct?
That is perfect.
I feel a lot of people say Lutwyler, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they go, actually it's every time wrong, but I take Lutwyler in England. That's okay.
Lutwyler. Okay, lovely. It's great to have you on. Here we are in the Northwest, a lovely part of the world, a lovely setting right now. So this is like your upstairs office.
Correct.
Yeah. There's a shirt on the wall, a Blackburn Rovers. This is a promotion
correct
season?
From the League One season where we got promoted to Championship. And I got offered that from a friend, actually, João Pereira, the Reading goalkeeper.
He gave that to you?
He offered to me, yeah.
Oh, so you didn't have that done when you were at the club?
No, so that's a gift, basically, that my wife and him together set it up and offered it to me later on, a couple of years after.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Of all the parts of England that you've lived, What's your favourite? Is this up there?
It's been, you mean in my career-wise?
In your career?
Yeah, in my career-wise, for sure. I think every promotion is something special. We had a very special moment at Shrewsbury, the first season I was there. With a promotion, the clean sheet records, all the things. I think I didn't sunk it in at the time. And then I got a move to Blackburn. We got promoted as well in that first season. And I think all promotions are actually a good memory and a good moment in my career.
Lots of affirmations, I feel, around here as well. Success, there's a picture about success up there. Make today count. Yeah, quite strong for you.
Yes, for sure. I think yeah, the more you see these messages, the more you print them into yourself and into your brain, basically, and all positive attitude around here.
And a guitar too. Is that yours?
Yes, it is mine.
It is.
I will not play.
No? I was going to say, can we have a little strum?
No, it's a horrible one. No. I actually bought it many years ago because I genuinely like it. And I took a few lessons. And yeah, after focus on football and stuff, I bought. I used to play a couple of songs. That's it. But not a nice listen.
No? Okay, no. Fine. So we start with some quickfire questions just to get the ball rolling. Very easy, no pressure on any of these. What gloves did you wear?
So as a kid, I just wore the gloves that my parents bought me. I would just wear any gloves that was there ready for me. And as I grew and went to training center with the Swiss national team, there I started to wear Puma, because it was sponsored by the national teams for a couple of years. And then I moved to Basel, where it was Nike, the big sponsor, and we used to get Nike glove supply from the club. So I played with Nike for probably 10 years. And after 10 years, I went to League 2 side Shrewsbury Town, and then Nike was like, we don't sponsor anymore at this level. And I met Miles, the One Glove
right
company. Yep. And this is about 10 years ago already or more. And they were very little at the time. They were just starting to grow. And I just say, yeah, I'm happy with what they offer. And since then, I always played with them for years. Yeah, he always told me he would supply me for life. So yeah, it's a good story.
And not so little now, One Glove.
No,
certainly.
Definitely. They grew massively. And the quality of the gloves, I think they found a market where people were just overcharging probably for gloves. And we were lacking of quality, maybe cheaper gloves for people to afford, and they got it perfect.
Favorite kit that you've worn over the years, or perhaps that you've seen another goalkeeper wear?
So with the national team, we used to wear Nike. They are those ones, they were extremely like Under Armour almost, extremely tight on the body, and like the materials and everything like that are for this, probably one of the best kits I ever had. I still have the shirts here, so
okay.
They were definitely one of the best ones I've seen and wore.
Most memorable save?
There'd be a few. No, I don't know. I probably would say I did one, a triple save with Shrewsbury, I think against Peterborough. obviously many years ago. That triple save, we kick the ball basically out to the front. We just get the ball and we score literally 5 seconds later. So I had a bit of good feeling, like the save and then that. So people were celebrating with me. And at the same time was a goal, which was a cool feeling and a bit more special than and then a normal save.
Absolutely. Goalkeeping icon.
I had a few. I looked a lot up to Petr Cech. I had a goalkeeper coach at Shrewsbury that told me, I'll try to find somebody that looks similar to you in your body, the way you behave, like, you know, everything, your size. I wouldn't choose like a small keeper. I was long and tall and, you know, I needed somebody similar to that. And I look a lot up to Petr Cech. Van der Sar, similar in very long keepers. And really good goalkeepers as well.
And the final one, the best goalkeeper you've either played with or against.
I'm not going to make friends here.
I was going to say, well, because you've retired now, it's fine.
But in every club I've been, I was very lucky to have amazing experience. I honestly, it's hard to tell. Obviously now, David Raya is doing so well. And we played together for a couple of years and we're still obviously now together talking. And for me, of course, he's doing extremely well. So he's the best one for me at the moment. And he'd be definitely the one up there in my top one. But then I had the chance to be with Jason Steele when I arrived in England. Oh, I still think he's an amazing goalkeeper. Chris Walton at Ipswich now. All these things, there's a lot. Andy Fisher, who is on loan now, and I think they are top goalkeepers, and that's why it's hard for me to choose. I think probably there's also some association of feelings and friends, and that's why. But probably Raya would be up there in the best talented keeper I've seen. And Pereira, when I was at Huddersfield with him, extremely talented as well. So it's hard. It's a hard question to tell, like, who I would choose, really.
It's a good list of names that you've played with there.
Yeah.
Some good caliber.
Yeah, they're actually all very talented and actually all very good people as well. And I think that helped as well.
So we are talking now at the very end of your career. You spent last season with Port Vale, but you've decided to hang the gloves up. Something new, we'll get onto that at the end of this podcast as to what your plans are moving from football. Was there a defining moment for you that made you think, do you know what, now it's time to finish?
When I finished my season at Port Vale, I didn't think to finish my career. I was generally thinking I'm going to do another year or two. And the summer went by. They had a couple of offers where I didn't feel it was right for me to go. And then I joined the PFA camps they do for the player out of contract, which is really amazing. And I really advise it to everyone to go there if they don't have a club. And I just started there. And then after a week or two, I had a chance to go on trial to Stevenage for a couple of weeks. It didn't work out. I went back to the PFA camp and I knew what I wanted for the definitely probably for the first time in my career. I was like, I'm not going to take anything for nothing. I wanted probably something close to here where I live now because we knew it was going to be only a short-term deal as well. Unless it was a big opportunity to go for 2 years, 3 years somewhere else, we would have moved. And anyway, the weeks went by. The more you wait, the more the waiting long offers comes in because a lot of people were looking for top goalkeepers or high-name goalkeepers and they were like coming back a little bit to other options. And again, the offers were not right or the moment were not right for me and therefore I just really want that my last year, if I do it, I really want to be in a place I really love to be. And I want to be in a place where I'm not enjoying to be there or I'm far from my house and my wife and everything. I really wanted to be in a place where I feel comfortable from the start. And yeah, I was kind of in peace as well with to say like, oh, if it has to be the end, it will be. And it kind of happened. And within a couple of months, obviously the PFA camp stops. I went back home and in that moment I thought, right, every club has the goalkeepers. There might be an option coming up. There will be maybe a club interested into something. There has been a few calls, but again, I thought it wasn't worth it. And then before Christmas already, we had a talk with my wife and we're like, I think it'd be a good time to just say that's it now. And then we just basically carry on our life and stopped it.
How did you feel when you made that decision, when you had that talk with your wife?
We had the talk a few times. We were saying, like, oh, what if you retire now fully? Or what is that? Or should we just wait? It has always been like on and off. So when I took the decision to be like, I think it's done here. It wasn't a big shock because we've been talking about it all the time. So it wasn't a big, and we felt it as well. I'm quite realistic to be like, I think it could be the end here. I think the biggest challenge I had was more when the camp finished with the PFA and you go back home and everyone else is training in the clubs. and you are here on your own, and you are like, well, I need to train on my own again and wait for something to happen. I think that was those couple of weeks or 3 weeks where I wasn't sure what should I do right now, where it was a bit tricky. And I was like, I wasn't sure if I should train or not train and everything. So I just kept training on my own in the gym every day. But then I also did it for myself more than actually for football. I just do it for myself. And if something good happened, I'm ready to go. And if not, I'm actually still fit for me.
It's such a fine, precarious line to tread, isn't it? That free agency line, because those PFA camps, some good names there. So David Coles was obviously running them. You had Jamal Blackman was in there. Mm-hmm. Marco Morosi, I believe, was in there too. It took Jamal a bit of time. He eventually got the move to Shrewsbury, but you have to hold tight. Marco went into Plymouth, of course, and then got injured. Yeah. That's unfortunate. But it's about knowing when to stick or twist, isn't it? Like I said, you went into Stevenage. Yeah. The move wasn't right. And what I thought was interesting, what you said there, was that for the first time in your career, you wanted the move to be what you wanted it to be. And that's what the best part of 15 to 20 years of a professional career. And at this stage, at the age of, what, 35? You've gone, right, no, now I'm going to do the move that I want to do.
Football has decided our life a lot in the past years, where we live, what we do. Your whole life is hanging on to football, basically. And I think when I reached this age, I was like, I know it's going to get to the end. I wasn't stupid enough to not realizing that. I was like, I have probably a year or two, and it's going to be tricky after to get another year or two after that. And I was like, if I want to do this, I really want to do it in a good place, in a good time, and it's a good environment and everything. And I had a few offers and everything like that. They were quite okay. But the season had some of them had the season started already, and they were bottom of the league, and they were just like, oh, do you want to come here? They were like, and until today, still, they actually never came out of that bottom because they never invested anything, and they tried to oversell something that wasn't there. And I could feel that, which I was happy. I never took the decision to go to clubs like that. But yeah, it was the decision I had to. I was, I think, quite in peace to be like, I think I'm okay to not play anymore. And I think my body as well. So, for example, I always thought I'm going to miss the game. I'm going to be really sad when it happened. And then, you know, weeks goes by and you just go like, oh, it's actually okay. I'm doing other things. And you realize other things are so important in life than just football. And then I had the luck as well to crack on straight with my after career job. And I'm sure that also helped a lot, because I know I was ready for going for the next step anyway. And I was not like, I was struggling to be like, oh, what am I doing today? I already had a plan to be like, oh, this could happen now.
I spoke to Ben Hinchliffe recently at Stockport County about that, about having a plan while you're playing, about what you're going to be doing post-football. And it's such a hot topic at the moment, isn't it? Because we've seen a lot of footballers fall by the wayside a bit post-career because of that structure. It's not so much the, everyone says, oh, you know, you miss the dressing room. Of course you do. But it's just that structure of when you're a footballer, being told where to be, at what time, not really needing to think for yourself, having a purpose in life. And suddenly, when you retire and that goes and you've got nothing else to fall back on, that's when lads tend to struggle. So it's so key for lads like yourself to focus on something before that, or at least build up to it, so you know that when you do hang up those gloves, you've got something to focus on.
Yeah, for me, I have to say, for example, all that feeling of like I'm missing the change room and stuff like that, it's never been a case for me. I always thought it's more the football field, to be on the pitch, training every day and stuff like that, was going to be missed. But it's been okay so far. Maybe in 5 years I might change my mind, but right now not. And I agree, it's difficult when you play, because you're in an environment that we don't want to speak about the fears and what if something happened, what if you get injured. This is something, a bit of a hot topic that people don't want to speak about. And I was just lucky enough. I remember being at Shrewsbury, I think in my first year, and we're talking about certain coaching badges about players will all have a B license, etc. And I just started to listen to it, and I was like, okay, we're 20 players here, about 15 of them have already licensed for coaching. And I was thinking, there ain't going to be that many teams to coach. And it actually clicked into my head to be like, I need to start to do something different than what everyone is doing in this room right now. Within a month or so, the PFA came in and suggested like, oh, the course, you can do it, etc. And that's how I got into it. And I was like, oh, I'm actually interested to do something. I said, what are the options? And then they said, oh, what do you want to do? I was like, I'm a bit lost. I will be honest. I was like, I don't know exactly. I know I want to stay in sport. I like psychology, I like physiology, all these things. I always enjoy that. And they were like, right, do a degree. And then after that, we see what you like the most. And then from there, you can base what you want to do. And that's how I started. With 25, I started a degree in Manchester Metropolitan University. I was very lucky that the whole timing went up, and I was like, I'm really convinced that's going to be a good thing for me in the future.
How is it mixing that with playing? So I suppose towards the end of your career, you were more in that number two role. So did it afford you more time to be able to do that?
I always say to players when I speak to them, I say, you have more time than you think, unless you have kids. I think you have the time for doing it. Don't get me wrong, if you have kids and everything, it's a different lifestyle and you have to adjust to your family, which is your priority. But then when you're not, you can just be home and study. You don't need to study much in a way where it's just to sacrifice those couple hours a day where you have to go for it and then go to your exams and stuff like that. Of course, the commitment, but it's something that you have to enjoy. I think I was lucky that I enjoyed certain parts of the university, like everything which psychology was. I loved it to do it. And then some other stuff, I didn't like it, so I was a bit lazier. But we have a lot of time, and I always say, if you don't want to do a degree, do something else. Like, it can be something so stupid. But I think the more you have under your CV, the better it is after for football.
Yeah, and again, that's a balancing act, isn't it? Not going too far on the business side that it distracts you from your football. But you're so right in terms of the time that footballers have. Now, of course, it's a high-pressure environment and you need to take time to switch off and not do anything. But I often say that to some of the young lads. You've got so much time on your side. Like, utilise that time. Don't go home and just sit on your phone. Don't go home and play Xbox or PlayStation or sift through TikTok and all that sort of stuff. Do something productive with your time. Even if it's not creating a business venture, just do something that's going to improve you as a person and just enrich your life more.
Yeah, I agree. I think it comes as well from the environment you come from. My family is a very hardworking family. They all work, they all build a business and stuff like that. And I think that was key as well, because I had them next to me. And, you know, when you call your dad at 7 a.m. and he's already at work for 2 hours, and then you call him back at 6 and you say, I'm still at work, you feel like, okay, I've been up for like 4 hours already here. I'm doing nothing and I could do something out of it. And I've always been like that. I'm a very active person. I always want to do something over my days. I never want to waste one. And I think that was how it clicked. And I spoke to a few people. They were like, yeah, it's convincing. And I think when I started at Shrewsbury, I was the only one doing any degrees. And we had the issue with the language as well, stuff like that. But we got it sorted, which was amazing. And then I just crack on. And then I met two other players when I moved to Blackburn. They actually started while I was there. They asked me a lot of questions of how does it work and stuff like that. So it is something I think as well, that if more player does it, more player will say, oh, if he can do it, I can do it as well. And it's a bit of a, you know, it affects other people. But of course, if you are having a team and nobody's anything, I think it's like, well, it must be the right thing to do nothing.
The language you mentioned there, when you said you had issues, was that when you first came to the country in terms of speaking English?
So when I arrived to Middlesbrough, my English was really poor. And then I had a northern accent as well, which didn't help at all. So it was a tough one that. But no, the difference was there's a bit of an English of the changing room or like the football field. And then there's the academic English, which I was nowhere near the level. And that was the big gap I had to fill out, basically, to start to speak more in an academic way and more swearing and shouting and stuff like that, you know, like the changing room talk, basically.
And you are, I said at the top, you're multilingual. So we've got Swiss, French.
So you have French because of my parents. I'm born in this French part. English, while I'm speaking to you right now. Yeah. A German, Swiss German. The fact I played in Basel for 6 years and I went still to school there for 2 more years. And then a little bit, I used to speak extremely well Italian, but I lost a bit everything. I still understand. And Spanish is my next language where I'm starting to improve little by little.
That's impressive. That's what, 5 languages there.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I don't even realize. For me, it's becoming something very normal.
What brought the Italian on?
In Switzerland, we have a lot of Italian managers. So they were speaking half Italian, half French all the time. And over the whole season, you start picking words and a lot of Italian players. Like, we have a lot of Italian people there. So you just start to pick it up. I was extremely good always speaking what is coming and then just understanding what's happening.
Speaking of your time at Basel, we won't focus from club to club and do all of that sort of stuff in detail, but there's a couple of bits that I noticed that were quite interesting. And that is the fact that I think you're the first goalkeeper who was spotted, especially that we've had on this podcast, after losing 6-0. Is that right? Yeah. Shipping 6 goals and you were spotted by Basel.
Yeah, that is correct, yeah. Actually, every time I've been spotted to a club, it was a weird story. So I was in my town, Neuchâtel Xamax, playing for the under-16, I think it was, under-16, yeah. I was going to start, I think you call it apprenticeship.
Yes.
So as a builder, drawing, and engineer, that's the word, engineers. And we played our last game of the season against Basel. We played the game and, yeah, we lost 6-0, got beat it clearly. But I actually had a good game where I made a lot of save and everything. And, yeah, I think a week or 10 days later, I think we got a call from an agent saying, oh, I'm representing by Basel. They asked me about you if you would be interested to come in for a trial. And I went on a trial for one day. They liked it. They were like, we want to see you back here and sign you a deal. With 16, you can sign like a short, like a year semi-pro contract, something like that. Yeah, so it happens. It was a bit of a weird feeling. They actually liked it, me, I think, the way I was and the way I was playing and everything. So regardless of the result, really.
What were the other funny ones that you can recall?
So the other one is when I got spotted by Middlesbrough. So I've, since a child, I always wanted to play in England. I always went to international tournaments, played many times. There's a big famous tournament, the Zurich Blue Star Tournament. United is going there every year and everything. And I always like, I'll get me into those tournaments. I want to show myself and maybe one day I have a chance to get an opportunity with an English team, etc. And never ever think coming out. And actually, when I was at the end of my contract with Basel, Basel was saying to me, like, you can leave the club. Even if I had a year left, actually. And they were like, you can leave the club. We're not going to carry on with you. And I was playing with the 21s. And with the 21s, we're playing against, a field stadium. There's not even a stand, nothing. It's just like a on the side stadium. And you play against a first team from another local team. And we always played before the first team. So maybe a couple hours before the first team, Basel play at home. And the scout of Middlesbrough actually came to watch our game to that field. And then he went to watch the first team, obviously. They came to watch a player in the first team. And we had the same agent. And that agent said, oh, I just seen the Middlesbrough scout. He actually told me he came to watch the under-21s game. And I said, oh, I'm looking after the goalkeeper. And he was like, oh, I liked him. And that's how he cracked on. And basically from that day, we started to have touch, contacts. And then I end up going on trial for one day, end of the season. I think it was in May. I was still playing in Switzerland. The club allowed me to go there for just one day, come back. And then we crack on like that. And then I went back again in the preseason in June. And a month later, I got a contract.
You went for one day?
Yes.
Sort of flew over?
Yes.
Trained for one day and then flew back?
And played Saturday, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And played Saturday back in Switzerland.
Yeah, so it was a crazy time. So because I was on the contract with Basel, I was on loan in another club called Schaffhausen. We are doing actually quite well. Listen, it was a win-win as well for Basel because they knew they wanted to release me, and by leaving me go, they wouldn't have to pay me as well an extra year of wages. I would go for free. Basically, we contacted the club and said, "Oh, he has an option to go on trial to Middlesbrough." And Basel was very good. They were like, yeah, he can go ahead with that. And then he said, just need the permission from the other club where he's playing at the moment. So we spoke to the manager. The manager's like, I don't want to stop you, but he said, I need you back on Saturday. So I was like, right, I'm going to fly Wednesday, train Thursday, and fly back Friday morning, train Friday afternoon, and then play Saturday at home. And yeah, that was it. And I trained twice on Thursday, I remember. Did you actually kill me, yeah.
So this is the stuff that people don't see, right, and don't understand sometimes or recognise with footballers who are just trying to make their way, goalkeepers who are just trying to make their way in the game, and recognise that training session can completely change the course of your career. I had an example recently with a lad who's at a championship club. An emergency call came in to play a game at step two. But it was very, very late in the day. The paperwork's managed to get through, but that lad's had to jump on a train. If he drove, he wouldn't have made it. So he's jumped on a train. The train's full, no seats. He's had to stand for the best part of 2.5-3 hours, get to the station, jump in a cab. No cab was organised for him. Jump in a cab, keep the receipt, go to the game, play the game, jump back on a train, go back to the championship club in for training. And that was because he was going to get 90 minutes of a game that would help him potentially bag a move in the summer. And that's the stuff that I think people forget footballers and especially goalkeepers have to do.
Yeah. No, it was it was an amazing experience. I would have never turned this back when they told me, oh, I can go on trial. Actually, I remember the scout, Gary Gill, he's called. He was like, I'm going to come and see him play. And we were having a great season where we were extremely good. We were battering team every week and I was barely doing anything. And I suggested to him, say, tell him I come on trial, because I said, they will see more from me in a day there than if they come to watch a 90-minute game. And he suggested that. They actually were like, oh, yeah, it's a good idea. He can come. Yeah, flew to Manchester, took a train, took 2.5 hours to get to Darlington, I think it was. And, yeah, I used to go to London. I never went above London. So it was a shock culture there. Like, where am I going, you know? I arrived in Darlington, in Yarm, a little train station.
Oh,
people
yes.
know, yeah. No cars, nobody there. I'm calling my agent, I'm like, what's going on? There's no one here to collect me. So, he told me he's on his way. And then, of course, Gary Gay was amazing with me. He came and a super nice person to me. Made me visit the training ground. Went back to the hotel. It's like, well, I'll pick you up at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning and you train. And yeah, I went there and trained twice. Actually, it was tough trainings. And I think I convinced them over the day because I think in the morning I was a bit shy. You know, like a new environment, everything, the condition, it was raining a lot, all these things. And then in the afternoon, I really felt like, oh, I need to kick on here and top up my performance. And it was Stephen Pearce, the goalkeeper coach.
Yes.
And I remember he was telling me during the training, I think, you know, when you see people like they're getting impressed, and I think he was getting like, oh, this is actually quite good what we're having here. And after the second session, he said, oh, actually, Tony Mowbray wants to speak to you. I went to speak to him. For a couple of minutes, went back in the car with Gary Gill. He brought me back to the train station, straight back to the airport. And in the car, he told me, oh, you know, we had a few goalkeepers on trial. You're the first one to talk to Tony Mowbray. So I said, I'll tell you it's a good sign. It doesn't promise me anything, but it's a good sign because they want to talk to you. So it was a very satisfying moment, but you never have a guarantee after that.
And you've taken a punt there, haven't you? You've effectively put all your eggs in that basket, knowing that you, so you knew that you were going to be released from Basel. Mm-hmm. So thinking, I'm going to be a free agent, so I'm just going to do whatever I can. So.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, at the end of the season, the Schaffhausen, we got promoted as well with them. And they were asking me, they called me, the manager, and it's like, I know you're free. We want to take you. With Schaffhausen, we're going to play, it was a new third division or something, League One. And it was like, but I know you have me support that maybe once you're on trial. And I said, yeah. And he was like, what do you want to do? I said, can you give me, how long could you give me? It's like, oh, in another week. And then in a week time, I need to have a decision. So I called my agent like, right, we need to have a week for Middlesbrough to tell us anything, if it's going to happen, if I'm going to go on trial or not. I wasn't going to let it go. And we kept calling and they were like, yeah, we don't know. Yeah, maybe, I don't know what was happening. I suggest they maybe have somebody on trial or et cetera. And then the gaffer called me. I was like, do you want to sign for us? And I was like, no, I'm going to go full on to Middlesbrough. And he was like, okay, good luck to you. And the day after, they signed somebody else. And there for like a few days, I was like, hope they call me back for a try.
It's a gamble.
Yeah, yeah. A big gamble. And I remember I was home and they called and my agent said, they're happy to get you there. And he said like, so those 4 or 5 days, I remember I was a bit panicking, thinking like, wow, maybe I did the wrong decision. They might never call me back. And yeah, they told us like, make sure he takes luggage. He can be here for a week or for 1 month. And I end up staying for 2 years.
But that first week, that first month, obviously you're not getting paid for that, right? Did you get expenses?
No, so I was still getting paid from Basel until the transfer was done.
Of course,
so that was
yes.
a good thing financially in that way. But at the time, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't looking for any finance, nothing I would have, even if I would have got any money, nothing I would go. I've never played for the money. It was one of my big motto in my whole career.
So 2 years you were there. Did you stay in Yarm, by the way? Is
yes,
that where you lived?
Correct.
Lovely place, right? Lovely place. Yeah. Some lovely coffee shops in Yarm.
Lovely.
That was where, I guess, you first adopted that number two role. And we spoke a bit off air about Ben Benson, the Blackburn goalkeeper coach, who I spoke to a few days ago and sang your praises, a glowing reference he gave, because he just explained that at Blackburn, you came in as well as that two after Shrewsbury. And we talk about the goalkeeping dynamic a lot and the one, the two and the three and knowing your roles and the differences in those roles between certain clubs and how they want their goalkeepers to be. But at Blackburn, you were very much the number two who knew your role and that really helped the department blossom.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think, of course I wanted to play and I just came from Shrewsbury playing 3 years on the bounce every game and Shrewsbury didn't want me anymore. They were like, oh, even if you still have another year contract, you can go. And then I had the opportunity to come to Blackburn, which was amazing. And they told me, we have a young Spanish lad. He's very talented, but he might need a help and like basically a push as well to get the place. And then when I arrived at the club, obviously I met Ben. We clicked on straight away in a good relationship with David. And all of a sudden, it was like 3 or 4 weeks, me, Fisher, and David were like really close friends. Probably it wasn't the best thing, but the dynamic was amazing then. And we had a great successful year and got promoted. So I'm sure he's a big key in the goalkeeping development for David or even Andrew Fisher or anything like that. I think it was a big thing.
Did you see then that David Raya that we now see at Arsenal, did you foresee him going to the very top?
I would say it was definitely so. I always say like the talent was a big thing from him. I think he was extremely dynamic, extremely physical, extremely good with his feet. And bear in mind, when I came to Blackburn, he is way younger than me. So he was like, yeah, maybe 21 or something like that. Yeah, would be probably. And for me, I was like, boy, he has like things I wish I had. And I always done that in every club I've been. I always try to pick things from others I really liked. And I use a lot of this stuff. I thought he was extremely good with his left foot. And Ben Benson probably would tell you, we spent hours, generally hours training on my left foot. And I was like, I want to get a left foot like he has, generally like where you don't see any difference on it. I think his talent was extreme for his age and his maturity to play at, in a club like Blackburn at that level, where the expectation was quite big to get promoted and all these things. And I mean, I could have never told he would end up in a top club like Arsenal, but I was not surprised when it happened, if that makes sense.
How did the left foot end up?
It's good. Nah, it's been good. Nah, generally, it was a big weakness in my career for years. And then I became very comfortable on it. And it's almost a shame that it happened so late in my career. But it tells you as well, you can always progress at whatever age you are.
Here's Salah to Sherlock, goes for goal, from a long way out, just over the top. Good save, actually. I think Ludwiger got a hand on that. Fantastic save. Sherlock, like an arrow from distance. And a wonderful save from Tad, Swiss keeper. Lawrence again. Challenge comes in from Oscar. Ref says play on. Ake might think about the shot. Short ball to Drogba. 20 yards from goal. Drogba hits it. Good save. Hit it well, Drogba. And Ludwiger got both hands behind the ball, took no chances. Punches it behind Chelsea corner.
So you had the spell as a two, but you also had a very good spell, and you have had good spells as a one throughout your career. So a club record 23 clean sheets for Shrewsbury in 2014-15. That's not been broken, I don't think, has it?
No, I don't think
it's so. Not been broken. No. So have we got a trophy here somewhere?
There should be one, yeah. I can get it out for you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there is one.
That's one in two, because you were ever present. Yeah. So that's 23 and 46. And there was a moment during the season as well where I remember the news articles, actually, where you'd, funnily enough, I was working for a magazine at the time, and one of the guys from the magazine came over and interviewed you. The hook was that no other goalkeeper in Europe at that time had made more clean sheets.
Yeah, I don't remember what time it was. Probably, I would say probably, I don't know. I actually don't remember when it was, but I wasn't even aware of it. You know, you week in, week out, you train, you play, and yeah, we're like, oh, clean sheet again, and clean sheet, you know, all this time. I think it's something like we're 5 games without conceding. But you have to think at the time, this is 10 years over. Instagram was just starting. All these stats were starting. I always thought, oh, if this happens right now, well, look at Trafford at Burnley, everyone talks about it. So I always think like, oh my God, if this would happen now, everyone would be talking about it like every week, like, oh, how many clean sheets you kept and stuff like that. So at the time, it became a bit like something normal. Nobody was talking really about it. The first really interest was that interview from I think it was the BBC.
Yeah.
And they came and told me, oh, you know, you have like something like 13 clean sheets. I was like, I don't even know. And it was actually a good moment.
It's funny how now, like you say, you're totally right that is utilised to build a player's brand. Like you mentioned Traff there and the 13 clean sheets, I think it was 12, 13 clean sheets on the spin. That's a huge, that will be a huge factor in him. I mean, listen, he's got the profile anyway, but in the summer that will of course be referenced, mm-hmm. as and when he potentially moves on from Burnley.
Yeah, no, for sure. Listen, I ended up staying in Shrewsbury that year. I had an interest from Sheffield Wednesday, but it was not talked at all. Within Shrewsbury, of course, but Shrewsbury is a bit, you know, end of the world. There's nobody looking for there. Maybe if the club would be based in London, maybe more people would have seen it or talked about it. So, yeah, we just got promoted and then I stayed there. I was also very aware that I didn't want to go back on the jump to Championship to become a number two or three again. I was also very, I was like, I want to play now 3-4 seasons on the bounce. And that was also a big factor why I definitely stayed. I was like, I want to stay and play a full year in League One. And I played most of the games. I got injured in between, but it was actually, I think, a good decision afterwards, because I still got the move after to Blackburn.
How do you weigh it up? So Blackburn, you played how many games in the spell? Was it 2 years you were at Blackburn?
3 years. Must be played like something like between 10, 15 games maximum probably.
So if you were to reflect on your career now, and you've obviously been a championship goalkeeper, 3 years at Blackburn, very big club, you've played 10 to 15 games compared to 3 years at Shrewsbury where you've played in excess of 140, 50 mm-hmm. games. Mm-hmm. What's got the biggest standing for you in your career?
So you mean what is the best or what is the balance between them two?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, how would you reflect on the both of those? Like, do you look at playing, do you prefer the fact that you've played the games or do you look and say, well, I got to the championship?
I'm a big lover of football and for me, there's like a lot of things. So of course, I love to play 140 games over 140 games for Shrewsbury. I enjoyed every minute of it and I took the opportunity, you know, and every game I was like, oh, it's an amazing opportunity for me again. Like, I came from so far something unimaginable at the time where I would play. So every game I was going, you know, when even the cup games are nobody's bothered, I was like so happy to play. I was generally buzzing about it and I knew I was amazing opportunity and all these things, and then I came to Blackburn and Blackburn was the step again. I wanted to like play in nicer stadium, be a nicer team, the training grounds bigger, everything is like Premier League set up, and that's where I enjoyed my time, where I was like, oh, I can develop myself again, and exactly with the left foot story, you know, all the stuff, I trained a lot of stuff and I had plenty of meetings with Ben and stuff like that, talking about what can I improve. I was using this time in a different way. Why, when I play, I don't have the time to improve certain area. I can improve my game, but I cannot improve during the training sessions. So that was just, there were good positive stuff in actually both ways. And the only thing I always say to people is like, when you come out of a club where you maybe didn't play for so long, the perception of people, I'll be like, well, he hasn't played for long, he's not ready. And I always say, like, well, we still train. And people need to understand that we are training hard, maybe harder than all the other goalkeepers at the time, because you are number two. So you still travel, you still do the warm-up, you just don't play, but the next day you're still training as the other one do recovery. And your sessions and your training weeks are actually more intense than anyone else.
It's a big thing that, isn't it? Because there is an argument for a goalkeeper to be match ready. And you're right, a lot of clubs will look at that and say, well, he hasn't played for 3 months. Do you believe in that match-ready perception that you have to have played games?
I think you can, but I think when you are young, I can understand. I think when you become old and you still have a bit of baggage behind you where you have games, I felt the more I was going towards my career, I was always saying, like, I could play tomorrow and I'm absolutely fine. I have no problem at all. And I would not feel like, oh my God, I'm out of position. But maybe when I was younger, at 22, 23, I felt like, oh, I need a few games to get into going. As the older I got, I was like, you can play me 50 minutes right now and I'll be okay. And that was a big, we had a lot of talks with Tony Mowbray. He told me one day, like, oh, I know I'm comfortable with you. Like, I don't have to worry about it. You will jump in and there will be no problem.
A couple of other clubs that I wanted to quickly touch on, Oldham mm-hmm. and Fleetwood. Mm-hmm. So Oldham, you were there during that quite turbulent time for the club.
Like, it was a bit a weird situation. So I end up at Huddersfield not playing for 4 months. And I was about 32 at the time, I think 31. And I just did a 6 months contract at Fleetwood and a 6 months contract at Huddersfield. I was like, right, I don't want to do another year, 6 months or a year contract somewhere else. And I got a few offers and all the offer coming in was one year. And I was like, I want to, I'm still fit. I've played for Fleetwood this season. And I just need to, and I couldn't get that to anywhere. Then Oldham came in. I was like, we're ready to offer you a 2 year deal. It was also convenient from where I live and everything. That was actually a good way to get there. I spoke to a few people. For people, I was like, oh, listen, it's a mess. The owner, everything like that. It's not very a quiet place. But I am somebody who can adjust to a situation extremely well. When I've been in worse clubs or worse situations, so I was like, I'm okay. And I signed the deal. And then I left to national team a week later for the Gold Cup in America. I stayed there, I think, for a full month. And then I came back the week or 10 days before the season start, and I got pulled onto the office and they say, your contract is not valid. We can't sign you and everything like that. We have to wait. They still had a debt to the league or to the...
Why was it not valid?
Because they had the debt from the COVID. They never reimbursed the money, I think, or something like that.
Right.
And they could not sign players. They were actually on a, you call it ban or something like that, like...
Embargo,
exactly. And I was like, right, okay. And they were like, you can leave if you want, or we just negotiate a new deal. And then, yeah, we basically negotiate a new deal. So I missed a few games before that the season starts, and that's when he was all kicking off with the balls and stuff like that. So we're like, I think, two players in that situation. And then, yeah, I started playing. Actually, I had a good start playing. We won a few games. And again, there I was thinking, like, I just want to play as most games as possible. I didn't play again for 3, 4, 5 months. I just want to get games in. Even if the result wasn't going well and there were a lot of turbulence around the club and stuff, for me, I was always seeing like, oh, an opportunity for me to play again and just get games into the, like, generally sort that way. And then, yeah, the manager got sacked, I think, in January. They took an interim manager for a few games. We played Harrogate away. We lost, I think, 2-0 or 2-1 or 3-0, I think, even. That Monday, I'm getting called up with national team, because when I talk to the national team is like, we're only watching your highlights. We don't watch the game's highlights, and we are very happy with the way you perform. And they were like, we have the World Cup qualification in Toronto and Venezuela, Salvador and Honduras. It's like, we would like to call you up. I was like, yeah, 100%, I'm coming. And when I left, they sacked the interim manager and took another manager. So basically when I left the club, they had a new manager for this time, and I was going to the national team for 2 weeks. So by the time I came back, they had played 2 games or 3 games, and I lost my place there, basically. So that's it. And then never came back in the team.
Wow. Yeah. Wonderful world of football. Right? Right there. Wow.
So, yeah, listen, I never regret it, because I was so like, when it happened, I actually remember thinking, like, is it a good decision to go to the national team now, as there's a new manager just got appointed now? But then I was like, I don't want to not go and then still get dropped in 2 weeks or 3 weeks and be like, oh, I should have go. Do you know what I mean? And I would never regret that. World Cup qualification for your country, you can't turn it down.
Was that always the number one for you? When your country came calling, it was like 100% I'm going to play?
It happened twice. It happened as well at Shrewsbury. My first call up with national team, played similar. It's actually a similar situation. We had Shrewsbury manager get sacked on Mickey Malone. We have interim coach Paul Hurst come as a manager. I play 2 games under him, basically a Saturday, and then the Monday I'm leaving to South Korea for 2 weeks. In that time, I think they have three or four games. They had the cup games and the league games. I come back, we play Sheffield United away, and Paul Hurst put me like, you ain't going to play, you're not going to be number one now. He's done well, and I don't see a reason why to change you. And I just stayed quiet. I was like, I'm going to do my work and see how it goes. And I don't know, maybe if, few games after that, 4 or 5 games, finally the result didn't go as well I think probably thought, and our game applies back, but without any talking, just doing the work on the pitch, and it worked out well.
Yeah, you don't strike me as being a confrontational type.
No, I always thought I'll show it on the pitch and see how it goes there, and maybe I should have. Sometimes when I speak to other people, they're like, oh, I'll go in the office of the gaffer now, that's not going to happen. I was like, why? It's like, is the reason why I'm not playing. I want to make sure I'm doing it right on the pitch first before going to the gaffer's office. The older I got, the better I became. But the same, I was never going to go every day to the office and say, oh, why am I not playing? The only time I was a bit more confronted was when I arrived at Huddersfield. I played for 6 months at Fleetwood. Crazy story happened where I got released, and then went to Huddersfield, and I was like, well, I got 4 months. I need to play here. I'm back in the Championship. I want to play so many games as possible. And I was fine with my friend Joe Pereira at the time, and he was number two as well. So we're fighting basically for the same spot, which was a weird one. And then Ryan Schofield was playing at the time. And I was away and going well. And I tried to gain my place. I was a bit more confronted with the manager, and I don't think he liked it. And I never made it even to the 18s at some point. Till maybe the last 10 games of the season, I was out of the squad completely.
We've got some barking Pomeranians just outside, so that might have just fed into the sound there. Two lovely creatures, mate. They're lovely. The crazy story at Fleetwood, we don't have to go too much into it, but I did read somewhere that Joey Barton at some point offered to pay your wages. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's about right. So I got released at Blackburn, and the FA got the idea to say, oh, we're going to cap the clubs. They don't have to spend so much money because of COVID. And so all the wages were basically as minimum as possible. And I was there. I had an opportunity to go to MK Dons. I spoke to the goalkeeper coach there, and they were like, oh, come as a number two and build your way up. And I was like, I've just done 3 years as number two. I don't want to go into League One and not play. And I felt like that ain't the right option for me. I need to go and play straight away. And then I was training at Accrington. They were letting me train there for keeping myself fit. And then I got a call from the assistant manager at Fleetwood. So our goalkeeper just got injured. Do you want to come in? and see how it is. And the offer was absolutely crap, financially, time-wise, everything. It was a 6 months deal. And then, Issa basically come in and train, and I was a bit not too sure for the 6 months. And then I came in, and the infrastructure, the environment, the club, actually Joe Barton and his team and everything actually brought a good environment to the club. And I thought, oh, I like this. And a day or two later, I signed actually for 6 months. Within maybe 3-4 games, I started playing and became number one, and played until Christmas with them, like that.
Still speak to Joey? Still in touch?
No, we haven't spoke for a few years. I spoke to him when he was at Bristol. We're talking that maybe I would go there as well on the contract at some point, but it didn't happen. But I had a good relationship with him. Listen, I know it's controversy around sometimes, but with me, he's been brilliant. And he offered at the end to the chairman to basically pay my wage because the chairman didn't want me to start the club.
On the international stage, which you've spoken a bit about there, you were a switcher of allegiance. So you came through the youth ranks with Switzerland, and then you opted to switch to Canada. You were a huge part of that World Cup qualifying squad, but then didn't make it to Qatar. That's a really unfortunate moment, I guess, in your career.
Yeah, this is actually one of the reasons where with Oldham, the story, why did I choose Oldham? Oldham was guaranteeing me to play as a number one at start straight out the season under Keith Curl. And I knew the World Cup was coming 18 months later. So I was like, right, even if I play in League 2, I know if I play for 18 months here, I have a big chance if they get qualified to go to the World Cup. So I went to all the Gold Cups, to the World Cup. So all the Gold Cup before that, I went in as a number 2 or 3. And then when the qualification started, it was also COVID. So it was very difficult for European people to go to Canada. With a vaccine, all this mess was around. And I was always in contact. And the goalkeeper coach was like, listen, I know what's happening. You're okay. Carry on in your club. We're happy that you play more than you come here for 2 weeks and you have maybe to quarantine all these things and lose time. So he was like, just stay in your club and play and play and play. So yeah, I was in touch. And then in January, they say, look, are you happy to come in now? I think was some stuff were lifted and were like, it's easier for Europeans to come now, come and be with the team. And I went there and we played 3 games and we won all 3 games and we're very happy. And then when I came back, I didn't play. And then we kept in touch, but I was feeling it. Okay, I need in the summer a big move again to play somewhere. To give myself a chance to go to the World Cup, and the move didn't happen. I stayed in Oldham National League as a number 2, ended up being a number 3 at the end of the season. Yeah. And that was all under a new owner, by the way. So people were saying, oh, it wasn't, no, at that time, actually, the club was actually sorted, actually in a good situation financially, everything. They were actually good. The owner who took over, they had a new manager, everything. Became actually a good club. It was just the situation where I was in. I think I had signed finally a 3-year deal at the end. And I think the club were like, we just want to get rid of him. And they tried, but they didn't achieve.
Were you in the Swiss setup with Jan Sommer? Would he have been around at the same time?
So Jan, I met Jan when we were 16 years old. We used to train every day together, basically. Because he used to be for under 21s and I was under 18s. And they used to group both group of goalkeepers training together. And then that year, then the year after, he got promoted straight to first team as a third choice. He used to come down to play with the 21s to get some game time. And I used to be his sub keeper at the time. So yeah, I played many training with him and many games with him.
Another solid, good goalkeeper over the years.
Yeah, probably it would have been better that I'd never met these people, but... Yeah, I would have probably had a better career. But yeah, it's also a good thing. I always say to people when I speak about these situations, like, I always felt, okay, I'll go beat, but generally better than me. And I think it's also, you know, a satisfying feeling to be like, oh, I didn't lost my place for nothing, basically, or didn't play for nothing.
Okay, so I'm going to set you some questions now, and then we'll get on to what you plan to do post-retirement. So it's just a quick quiz to finish off the pod, and that quiz is Jason Luttweiler. How well do you know you? So some questions on you and your career and your life in general. Cue the music. You made your professional debut, I think, on loan at Everton Sport. Everton Sport.
Yeah.
On the 26th of July 2009, who was it against and what was the score?
FC Thun, and I think we lost 4-1.
5-3.
Yeah, close. 50. I got a crazy story that day. This is my debut, and I'm actually playing fully ill that day. The club, I arrived there they had another goalkeeper. The goalkeeper finally signed somewhere else just before the season starts. They signed a goalkeeper on emergency on the Friday night, something like that. Like, and I'm like, ill. I am in bed fever and everything like that, and I still went to play the game, yeah. And like top heat day, like July summer, very hot day. And when I started to concede goals, like that was a bad stuff for me to go and play this game. But I didn't want to give up. I was like, I want to go and do it for it, yeah.
Funny how things work out like that. You waited so long for that opportunity, you get it, and then you're ill.
I know. It happens a lot during my career, those things, so yeah.
Who was the goalkeeper in the opposite net that day for FC Thun?
Would it be Jakupovic?
No, not a goalkeeper that I've heard of, to be fair. Sasha Stoltz.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I had an all right career, yeah?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. You were born in the Swiss canton of Neuchâtel.
Mm-hmm.
Which other goalkeeper currently plying his trade in the EFL was also born there?
He's playing currently in the EFL.
Yes. You've mentioned him quite a few times. I think he's a good friend of yours. Yes.
Course,
he was born there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. What was the shirt sponsor during your time at Middlesbrough?
Is it Ramsdens, they call it?
Ramsdens, yeah. Correct. Against which team did you break the record for recording the most clean sheets ever in a single season for Shrewsbury Town?
Is it Cheltenham away?
It's York City.
Oh, York City, 1-0 at home.
That was
talking about good saves, I did a good save that day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was the 22nd, yeah. So one before the 23rd. How many times... Well, this is going to be a difficult one. How many times were you booked in your English career in all competitions?
Wow, this is tough. Red card for sure not. I did like to waste time a lot. I'd say about probably 10.
Close. 13.
Not bad.
Which is the number that you wore at quite a few clubs. I'm not a fan of 13 for a goalkeeper, but you chose it at most clubs, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Any particular reason or just because it's the next one?
I think the number 13 is people always like say it's an unlucky number, and I always try to twist it in the other way and say, well, if it's their unlucky number, it'd be my lucky one.
Perfect. And there's no evidence, right?
Exactly. There is no science behind this, actually.
One of your three Canada caps came against Scotland in March 2017. Where was the game played?
Edinburgh.
Correct. Hibernian, East the Road.
Yeah. I don't know the name of the state.
I'll give you Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And by what name are Fleetwood Town often referred to?
Is it the Cod Army?
The Cod Army, correct. And finally, your name, Jason, is spelled with a Y. Not many like that. Can you name another sports star who spells his name in the same way?
Do you know what? I've seen someone who does has the same name, but I could not tell you right now who is it.
So there's one big famous one, I'd say.
Is he an NFL player or something like that?
He's basketball, NBA.
Basketball player.
Yeah. Jason Tatum.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a few others as well. Jason Nix was a baseball player. A few of them about, but not many. It's a unique way to spell Jason.
Yes. Do you want any reason why?
Go for it.
So I asked one day my parents, like, why am I have a why? And they told me because in Switzerland, if we would have called you Jason in the French part, that would be changing your name to Jason, which is not the name they wanted to call me because we're really Jason.
It would be Jason.
Yeah.
Without the Y.
Yeah. And then because they put the Y in Switzerland, they had to say the J first. After sometimes they messed around the rest, they would say Jason, or like, but they had to say the J because of J-A-Y. So that was the reason why they put that Y in there.
Ah.
So the people would not spell my name wrong.
Are both your parents Swiss?
My dad is Swiss, my mom is Canadian.
Oh, right, okay. So I'm guessing that was driven by her.
All our family names are all quite American ways.
Right, yeah. Okay. I should also say, you grew up in Switzerland. You told me downstairs that you don't like chocolate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sacrilege, surely.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? I used to hate chocolate. I used to eat chocolate when I was younger. And with the years, my diet started to become very healthy and never eat chocolate. And then to the point where basically when I take chocolate now, I feel it is too sweet for my body. And I don't enjoy it at all.
Well, look, thank you for your time. I've really enjoyed this. First time that I've interviewed someone who's literally just retired. Yeah. So it's quite nice to get a different perspective. And I can tell just from your energy that you're at peace with your decision. And
I
you're
think
happy.
So, yeah.
And so let's talk about what is next for you. You studied, are moving to Spain. Mm-hmm. Is it whereabouts in Spain?
Near Valencia.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Lovely part of the world. So what's on the agenda?
So, yeah, basically, we talk about my degree. I did it when I was 25, and then I... end up doing your thesis, your last work of the degree. And I was really into psychology. I loved it. And I did a whole thesis about the psychological aspect of goalkeepers in the championship. I had the chance to interview a few goalkeepers to give me a good stuff and really enjoyed to do that. And then I went to do a master in sport psychology at Staffordshire University. That was 2 years. I did that for 2 years. And again, at the end, I did another work again, but this time for Premier League goalkeepers. Again, all around the psychology way. The perception, if things are presented the way they should be presented to us. And it was super interesting. And I wanted to do mental coaching or sport psychologist later on, etc. And when I finished basically the master, that was obviously last year, already about 18 months ago. And then when I finished the camp with the PFA, there was those couple of weeks where it was about a strange moment where I didn't know why I should kick on with something or not. And then my mental coach that I used for 13 years called me from Switzerland and he said, I want to expand my company and I want to work with you. Would you be happy to do that? And we were like, yeah. Say, okay, it's just a role project. Let's see how we're going to do it. And then, yeah, we are launching officially the website in a few days, actually. And it's a good thing. It's going to be myself, obviously him, and two other people who are also coming from the sports department and studying psychology.
So this will all be remotely, I'm guessing, because yes. You're based in Spain.
Yes.
But you're welcoming goalkeepers to get in touch with you?
Yes, right? Of course. I'm working already with actually many goalkeepers here in the UK and also outfield players. And we have started already from October when we had the first chat. I said, right, I want to kick on straight away. And we started straight away and I started to contact goalkeepers I know and people around and agents and stuff like that and say, look, that's why the service I'm offering now. Something quite unique, I feel, that a player has played a game and studied the psychological way of it and offering this service to the people that still play. I thought, oh, that is actually something quite unique and rare. And that's how I approach people. I said, this is quite rare and I think I can help you.
And it's not, obviously, it's not a one size fits all. You have to tailor to the goalkeeper that you're speaking to. But do you have... I don't know, is there a sort of structure in place whereby you speak to them before games, after games, at some point during the week? Do you have a specific plan for each one?
So yeah, everyone is so different. And that's one of the first things I always say to them. I say, guy, I can't tell you what we're going to do, but I need to speak to you first. And then I'm going to personalize the best thing for you right now. I feel it's going to help you. I'm going to prioritize something that should be. As example, now we are coming towards the end of season and speaking to players to be like, what is important now is your next 3-4 games because the season is coming to an end. And then what is happening next season? We have time to think about it. It's prioritizing basically the thing. And then goalkeeper, that is a number one. I have different priority than a number two or three. This is what I always do. I like to have a first talk with them. We basically start to know each other. And I always say to them, it's also important you feel comfortable with myself. And then it's all about confidence and feel like you're happy to talk to me and tell me your challenges, etc. And once we've done that first talk, then we meet again a week or two after, and that's when we go into a deeper conversation and where I can help them.
You said yourself that you had a mental coach mm-hmm. for the best part of 14, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So that was, that's quite a while ago that you decided to do that.
Yeah, it was a big thing. For me at the time, I was in Switzerland. I was going to Yverdon Sport, doing my first debut for championship club. And the agent I was working at the time was like, listen, I think you could benefit from it to work with a mental coaching and stuff. Again, this is 15 years ago, a bit of a weird feeling about it. I was like, I don't think I have any problems. And at the same time, I feel it could help me. Nobody was using mental coaching at all. I was like, you know what? I'm going to use this as an investment. Is this money going to change my way to live food-wise? Or do you know what I mean? Priority-wise? I was like, no. And I was like, but can it change my career? And I was like, probably yes. And that was the decision I took. I was like, I need to go ahead with that. And I will know if I don't achieve my goal, I will have no regret and not the feeling, oh, what if I would have used maybe a mental coaching to get me more resilient and more confident? Maybe I would have achieved something bigger. Now I know I've done everything on the pitch and off the pitch and the outcome is the outcome, but I've done everything I could.
Is the goal to work with someone throughout their career, or do you feel like you work with them for a period of time, you effectively make them better, to say in layman's terms, and then that's your job done?
Yeah, it depends. I think everyone's needs is so different. Ideally, you want to have it the longer the better, not for me, but just for him. I think we forget that sometimes we maybe have 2-3 sessions and we feel like, oh, I feel actually very good here. I don't need him anymore. And then you might need just one setback in a few months later and you're like, everything is going down again. And then you start from zero. It's like a muscle. You have to train it all the time. Even if you're not doing it with me, do it at home and train that muscle, basically, your brain. And it's a funny muscle. He never forgets what you've been through. So he will make sure to remind you the day you forget about it.
And where can people find you? You said there's websites, also yeah. Your socials.
Yeah, social media. Of course, Instagram. On my Instagram, you can contact me. And of course, website will be live in the next few days. And you can see all the information and stuff. But I'm a very open person and easy to contact, actually.
What's the domain, the web domain?
The name of the domain
yeah.
is www.alameyer.ch. So ch, www.alameyer.
Alameyer.
Yeah, dot ch.
Want to spell that? Alameyer.
alameyer.ch.
Alan Mayer.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Dot ch.
That wasn't that bad.
No. Sorry.
Oh, Alan Mayer. Yeah. Nah, I can, in Switzerland, it's a very easy name to say.
Yes, no, yeah. I heard Alameyer.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's two names.
Yes, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Apologies. So we finished the pod with one final question, and that question is asked by Richard Lee. So over to Richard.
And as we draw to a close on what has been another fascinating interview, it's time for the big question. Jason Luttweiler, what has goalkeeping given you?
A tough life. It has given me a tough life. I always say to people, you can have amazing career with amazing experience, right? And but there's all the stories are so different. We could be talking for 2 hours. Generally, I have millions of stories of my career, why I didn't play, or why this or that. And yeah, it's a roller coaster for some of them. Some of that is easier maybe. But it has given me a lot of tough times. And my advice would be definitely, if you feel you need support and stuff like that, like use it as soon as possible. But it has also given me, in the positive way, a lot of happiness moment. I met my wife through football. I met a lot of friends through football that I know we're going to stay in touch for many years. And it has given good things, you know. It's like my first life has finished now and my second life is starting.
Jason Luttweiler, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for coming.
Steepman to Jamal Lewis, who's roaring forward again here. Corner of the penalty area. Worked nicely by Steepman to Hernandez. Can Hernandez get the shot across? Pukki's there! Pukki's there! Yeah, all over the line!
That was over!
No, it wasn't! What a save! That was from the goalkeeper, Luttweiler.